In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And we're here today to, first I'm gonna reveal a little bit of information.
Okay.
Due to, I'm sure, the thing that we all know is going on with some kind of, I don't know, medical issues happening all over the world.
Constantly.
Yes.
En masse.
An epidemic of things.
Pandemic, technically.
I don't know
the difference between the words.
Pan would be like the whole world.
Oh.
Yeah.
So bigger than epa. Epidemic is like a country?
An area with an epicenter. The pan is like the whole world.
Shit.
So yes, we're under a pandemic right now by the World Health Organization. I'm not going to say their acronym.
They
declared it a pandemic because of the COVID-19.
Totally, yeah.
Because of that, there have been a few things that are happening for people to try to keep their spirits up as best as possible in this weird and wacky time. I'm not going to say that it hasn't hit me. I'll admit I'm dealing with some dark thoughts and feelings over this, because just the way that some of the things are being handled, the things that I'm worried about coming down the line.
I can agree with some of those points. Yeah. We've had some of that discussion, and I can agree with
that. But tonight we want to try to stay positive. We want to do the same thing that Disney seems to have tried to do, and that I think you told me Pornhub.
Oh.
Pornhub has tried to do.
Okay, yeah.
Which,
and
by the way,
some of the good
way,
news in the pandemic for us to to revel in for a minute. Obviously, things are not going great for Italy right now. We do not need to go over all of that.
No.
One of the coolest things, though, because everybody is being holed up right now in Italy, Pornhub has actually decided to give their premium service for free to everyone in Italy right now.
I mean, what can you say when a porn website says, you know what, people, y'all got to stay home. You're dealing with all these awful things happening to you.
Right.
We can't do, it's not like we can get you guys medicines. It's not like we can get you guys hospitals. It's not like we can get you guys food. What we can get you is free access to high quality porn, and hope that maybe that can distract you for,
that is,
you know, a minute if you're a guy, 30 seconds to a minute if you're a guy, 15 minutes if you're a woman. I mean, that's an awesome thing.
That is almost sainthood level.
I would say
benevolence
so.
On their part.
I just want to remind
deal
people
is like they're trying to make money doing
that. They're trying to make money off of people's perversions.
Quite a bit. I can commend them.
Yeah, give it to them for free. That's an awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
I just want to remind people we will still be having at some point our podcast on pornography, because
that's going to be a weird day for me.
Well,
that's going to be weird.
As I pointed out to Mike, it's actually relevant to the Xenial experience. You wouldn't necessarily think so, but it is.
No, but the evolution of
say more.
I will say nothing.
Save it for that episode.
Yeah, the evolution of that is insane.
But one of the other things that has happened on a more family-friendly note, Disney has actually done some things with releasing some of their big movies a little bit early. Frozen 2 has come to Disney Plus sooner.
Yes.
For people to have access to. And the thing that's closer to my heart, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, has been made available for digital purchase sooner.
That's
It's not
fantastic.
Available on Disney Plus yet. We actually just researched before we came.
We did. We were thinking that it was, but it's not out here anyway.
It's still for sale. It's still not coming out for sale on Blu-ray and DVD until the 31st of March.
Oh, cool.
But at least if you're somebody who likes to get the digital downloads of your movies, if that's how you like to consume your media, you can purchase it on digital download now. It is now available for that. And I have some updates about that movie. I know we've done episodes on all the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, I want to hear about this. He mentioned a little bit about this and didn't give me any details. I've been kind of kicking at this for a bit.
Well,
so
the novelization has come out. And this is interesting because I remember when episodes 1, 2, and 3 came out,
mm-hmm.
I actually had the novelizations for those movies
mm-hmm.
a week before the movies actually came out. So I already knew
most
of the
plot
twists.
You knew what
the
movies were.
Yeah, I knew most
before,
of the plot twists beforehand.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's cool.
Although I knew one of the plot twists when I saw the trailer, but that's just because I knew my history. When I saw episode 1 and I saw the trailer, I already knew that Darth Sidious was Palpatine because I'm smart. But anyway,
that was something that was kind of assumed to anybody who had seen it before. They were just looking like, oh yeah, that's him.
Yeah,
yeah, I remember that.
But anyway, in the Rise of Skywalker novelization, it actually
before we go deep into this, yes. One of the reasons why this is such a big deal is because let's go over that for a second.
Okay.
One of the problems that people have with Rise of Skywalker overall as a film. Although I personally didn't, I understood that they had to cram so much information in such a small amount of time.
The pacing of the movie is what you're leading to, right?
Stupid fast.
Very
and not
fast.
Only that, but there's a lot of scenes that were cut. Especially I found out that there are a ton of scenes with major plot points that have to do with feeding the emotional draw of the story. They're omitted that JJ wanted to put in.
Yeah,
and a lot of people they're blaming JJ for being a bad director.
No, he was basically told to trim it down to a theater watchable length. Which I'm sorry, I think that Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War proved that people would sit through 3 hour long movies if it was the epic conclusion of something.
Well, worst case scenario, make an intermission, put an intermission in there. Done before.
I would have sat. I would regularly sit through a 3 hour Star Wars movie. And the thing is, I'm the people that they're aiming the movie at. So
okay, if you want to talk about that, especially as far as that's concerned,
yeah,
there are people that do Lord of the Rings marathons in the theater, 9 hour long. Lord of the Rings marathons were
done before
Return of the King came out.
Okay.
Return of the King came out. That was one of those time deals.
All I'm going to say about those people is those people are weak. Those people are weak.
Weak, he says.
And not worthy of my praise. Because you know why? They only did the theatrical cuts once a year.
I thought they did the extended.
No, the extended cuts did not come out until the DVD. If they were watching
they
were watching it in the theater, they were only watching the theatrical cuts.
Did they not do the extended before? No. Though, because they had extended of the first and the second one before the third one came out, right?
I don't know if they did or not.
And I thought that they put the extended first.
I don't think they did.
There's a lot of stuff missing.
I don't think they did have the extended by the time the third one came out. Because they were all filmed back and forth. In fact, the last shot that was filmed for Return of the King, the last shot was for the extended cut of it, was filmed 1 week before it won the Oscars. 1 week.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So
the extended cut stuff wasn't necessarily done before the other movies were.
I did not know that they went and revisited post-production.
Actually, it was like 5 years of filming total.
So they did full production shots after the film came out in order to fill in the points that they wanted to fill in when they filmed the movie.
Yes.
That's insane. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Watch the... a true Lord of the Rings fan. Now, you only have, I think, one of the movies in the special edition with the extended
edition.
That's
because I can't find the other two.
Okay. I have all three. And what those have that's even better than having the extended edition of the movies is the probably 120-some-odd hours of behind-the-scenes footage.
Wait, this is on... Is it per movie or for all three?
All three. All three, about 120 hours, I would say, of behind-the-scenes footage.
Okay.
And it may be less than that, but that's about what it feels like. It's a huge amount of behind the scenes where they go over everything that you could possibly imagine regarding the movies. Like you find out about the fact that freaking Peter Jackson was trying to explain to Christopher Lee what kind of sound he should make as Saruman when Wormtongue stabs him in the back.
Uh-huh.
And Christopher Lee turns to Peter Jackson and says, "Do you know what sound somebody makes when they get stabbed in the back? Because I do." Because he was an SAS operative in World War II.
Man.
Christopher Lee was. He was an SAS operative for the British. He was a freaking secret agent during World War II.
There's footage of that?
There's Christopher Lee. There's not footage of it. There's Christopher Lee telling the story.
Oh my goodness!
Of this, Christopher Lee was like, "No, dude, I know what it sounds like. What sound a person makes when you stab them in the back? Because I've done it to people. I have stabbed people in the back.
Holy
and killed
shit!
Them." I mean, he doesn't say those exact words, but that's basically what he's trying to say.
Well, either that or he's witnessed it. Like he knows what the sound is.
No, dude, the way he says it.
I had to do it. Yeah, I've done it. I've been there.
It's
oh my god, that's insane.
Yeah, the extra special features on that are amazing. But anyway. You're getting me away from Star Wars. You got me on the Lord of the Rings, which I love just as much.
Yeah. But we're veering off topic a bit too far.
So the novelization has come out for Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
And what the novelization does is it fills in all of these plot holes and questions.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when Kylo Ren originally arrives on, I can't think of the name of the Exegol, the planet that Palpatine is on with his Sith worshippers and all of this and his giant Sith fleet. When he originally arrives there and arrives in the room where he sees the vat of Snoke clones. By the way, we didn't say it before. We'll put it in the thing. There are spoilers, but gosh, the movie's already been out. And it's coming on video. So just people deal.
You've had time to watch it.
Yes. Or get information about it.
Yeah, get your ass over to a matinee theater, a dollar movie. Yeah. Well, they don't call them dollar movies anymore, but discount movie theater. Like, they're still out there.
But anyway, when he sees the vat of Snoke clones, he has an internal dialogue of, okay, these are clones of Snoke. What the heck? And then when he sees Palpatine, he recognizes that Palpatine is in a cloned body.
Oh,
and the cloned body cannot contain Palpatine's kind of essence, his spirit.
Oh.
What happened was Palpatine's body was destroyed in the second Death Star explosion.
Right.
At the moment that it happened, the Sith adherents that were on Exegol were mind connected to him and aware of it, and they pulled his essence using basically all this dark old Sith lore. They pulled
his essence. Like force tech, I guess, sorts? It's a combination,
there's
right?
There's tech and then there's force abilities involved.
Okay.
They pulled his essence and they already had clone bodies waiting for him in the instance that something, you know, happened.
Oh, son of a bitch. Motherfucker!
So, anyway, these clone bodies were there just in case something like this happened.
Okay.
Like I said, and so they pulled his essence into one of these clone bodies, but it like didn't work completely. The clone body really wasn't strong enough.
Okay.
So they had other clone bodies of Palpatine, but none of them were strong enough. Specifically, one that they tried to put his essence into, the bodies kept deteriorating and breaking down because of all of this evilness and Sithness that existed within Palpatine's essence. One of the bodies they tried to put him in totally basically rejected his essence. But the clone itself was sentient. It got his like some of his personality stuff, not like the bad parts of his personality,
right.
But it got some of the sentience from him, some of the stuff from him, but it got none of his force abilities, none of that stuck into it, so it couldn't hold the essence of his kind of Sith spirit.
It was a non-force-sensitive clone?
Yes. And that clone...
What?
Oh, it gets better. That clone ends up leaving Exegol and has a kid. That clone is Rey's dad.
That's how it's put together?
So Palpatine does not... People can get over the idea of Palpatine going around having sex with somebody and producing a kid. No, it is a clone of Palpatine that did not accept the force side of his essence, of his, you know, whatever.
Shut up.
That clone had the kid. So technically, Rey is a granddaughter of Palpatine. It's more like a kind of offshoot daughter of Palpatine. It's his clone's daughter. So it depends on what you.
Okay.
That's how you. It depends on how you view the clone, whether it's a version of you or it's your kid.
So that explains her being so genetically tied to Palpatine.
Yes, because it's literally so based off a clone.
Part of me isn't thinking that it was that he was force sensitive, but that the clone itself would have rejected.
The clone had no force ability at all.
How would then Rey be so force sensitive herself?
It still could have gone through. The thing is, all the Jedi that you see,
The one who discovers all this.
No, well, yes, this is revealed. Well, that part's revealed to Kylo Ren at some point or another in the novel.
Cool,
but
that's bitching.
But the thing is, all the Jedi that you see throughout the Clone Wars,
yeah,
and up until Luke and Leia, really,
yeah,
were for the most part, they weren't born of Force sensitive parents, because Jedi, well, they may have been, but Jedi weren't allowed to have relationships and have children, part of the Jedi code is that they don't form attachments to anything. So they don't have children.
Okay.
Because, and part of the reason.
Sith too?
Well, Sith have problems connecting to any people like that because they just use right. everybody for whatever they can.
Okay.
In certain, now there are certain cultures within the Star Wars universe. For instance, the on Dathomir, the Night Sisters on Dathomir, they specifically choose Force-sensitive males, mm-hmm. who are typically Zabraks. A Zabrak would be Darth Maul was a Zabrak, for instance.
His race?
That's his race, a Zabrak.
Oh, okay.
Or it's just Zabrak. I say a Zabrak, and I don't want you to think the A is part of the word. The word starts with a Z, Zabrak.
Okay, so it's like saying Vulcan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a Vulcan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, the Night Sisters take the Zabrak males and mate with them to create Force-sensitive witches, basically. The Night Sisters are
whoa,
a bunch of witches.
Okay.
On Dathomir. They also ride Rancor, so yeah.
Damn.
The witches of Dathomir are badass.
Yeah.
But anyway.
If you don't know what a Rancor is, just watch Jedi.
Yes, Return of the Jedi.
To anybody who doesn't know, it's the giant monster that's inside the chamber that Luke gets dropped into.
Yes, underneath Jabba's throne room.
That is a Rancor. Yes. They ride those things like horses, man.
Yes, actually the Rancor that's in Jabba's throne room is quite small in comparison to what Rancors normally are, mainly because it's very underfed. They starve it so that it'll eat whatever's thrown down in the pit. They're actually omnivores.
Oh.
Yeah, at least in the expanded universe. I don't know how they deal with them in the current stuff, but like in the Legends expanded universe, they were omnivorous.
Damn. So, okay.
But so that's where Rey's father comes from. It's not technically a son of Palpatine, it is a failed clone of Palpatine. And that's why Palpatine is connected to all this machinery. It's a clone body that Kylo Ren is able to recognize. It can't hold in all of the essence. And that's why at the end of the movie, when he finds out that Kylo Ren or Ben, actually at that point, Ben and Rey are a Force dyad, he realizes that they're a Force dyad,
uh-huh.
which is something that naturally occurs in the Force. The Sith with their kind of rule of two have tried to basically part of the rule of two is they've tried to create a Force dyad for all these years,
mm-hmm.
but you can't create a Force dyad. It just has to happen by the will of the Force.
Gotcha.
And so it's like just, an act of nature happening. Basically you can't force an act of nature. It just has to happen.
Huh?
And when he recognizes the dyad, the drawing of the power away is an old Sith power, which I discussed the last time we discussed
this. Yeah, I remember that.
The fact that they're a dyad makes the power even, the connection between them and the Force even greater, mm-hmm. and that's why he's able to actually make the clone body hold his essence. He can complete the clone body, and it will hold his essence.
So he's manipulating the Force in order to allow his clone body to operate properly, right?
Well, no, that's why at the end, when he sucks the power from them, he's able to detach from the machine, and his body is whole again.
Yeah,
he's basically completely empowered the clone body to hold his essence by sucking their power away.
Okay, so that's similar to when, and I've seen more than one instance of this, it's similar to when Darth Vader's machinery fails on him, he's able to use the Force to continue to breathe and continue to keep going until it boots back up. Because I've seen that in instances before.
Actually,
where his machinery is temporarily, like an EMP can take it out or something.
One of the novelizations that is, I think, considered Legends now, Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
There's a video game for the N64, which is a great game.
I have it.
Wampa Stompa, always. One of the novelization for that gives you some very interesting characters. Tells you how Princess Leia got the Boosh costume that wears in Return of the Jedi. Why Chewie's hair looks different in Return of the Jedi, because they actually explained that he got a haircut and dyed they were actually on Coruscant at one point.
Oh, really?
And it was the first novel that actually detailed Coruscant. Was Shadows of the Empire.
Oh, whoa, before it showed up in the...
Yeah, it was the first novel to do any real detail of what was happening or what Coruscant was like, even before the... Because it happened before many of the other Legends novels happened later.
Yeah.
That in the Legends novels, they talk about Coruscant all the time. In the New Republic, after the Battle of Endor,
yeah,
they go through the whole New Republic and, a whole different future than what you see in the cinematic universe of it. And the new, the new Star Wars universe, because that's all the books are all Legends stuff now. But yeah, it explains how Princess Leia got that costume, how Chewie, his hair looks a little bit different. It also deals with Luke building his new lightsaber. after having lost this one.
Nice.
And then has the character of Dash Rindar, which is a kind of a favorite for many people. Again, he's the main protagonist of the video game. But there's one point in there where Darth Vader is in his kind of isolation chamber. It's the only place where he can have his breathing unit removed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to heal himself with the Force. And he can't do it because he has to tap into the light side of the Force to heal. And every time he starts to heal just a little this bit, his hate comes flowing back out again and it stops the healing process from happening.
Whoa.
And it shows that even then he was still not fully engaged by the dark side of the Force. And the thing is, Anakin Skywalker as Vader was never fully engaged to the dark side of the Force.
Right, right, right.
There was there was always some light in him, and Luke was able to find it. Palpatine, always dark. Dark as hell. I mean,
he was unquestionably crazy.
Yeah, the beauty of the Clone Wars is watching. There's actually one episode in the Clone Wars where Palpatine actually does a lightsaber battle. Oh my God. He takes on Darth Maul and Darth Maul's brother, Savage Opress, who's also a Zabrak.
Uh-huh.
He's actually a mutated Zabrak by the Witches of Dathomir. They mutated him to this giant hulking beast. Voiced by Clancy Brown, too, which is always fun. Anytime Clancy Brown does a voice.
The Kurgan. Mr. Krabs?
Yes, and the Kurgan from Highlander.
Oh!
And the drill sergeant from Starship Troopers.
Oh, that's who that is. Yes. Oh, that's great.
I love Clancy Brown. He's great.
Yeah, I know we've discussed Clancy Brown before, yeah.
But anyway, these clear up a few of the major, like, why did this happen? What's going on? These were some of the questions that people had.
Yeah.
This novelization helps to clear up a lot of those questions as to, you know, where the heck did Palpatine come from? By the way, Palpatine only started sending his message that is referenced at the beginning of, you know, the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. The dead speak. In the whole freaking... That bothered me, but then again, it does fall into the whole Flash Gordon serial type, you know, things.
It does give me that. Like, I was... It's one of those things you look at the first time and go, and then you forgive it immediately.
Yeah. Well, he didn't start sending out his communications until after Luke was dead.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
So Luke seemed to be the only thing that he was afraid of and concerned with taking him down.
Gotcha.
Because Luke... possibly could have been able to. I mean, the fact that Luke was able to force project across galaxies to engage in a fake lightsaber battle with his nephew. I mean, what the heck? But no, I mean, it's nice that the novelization clears that up. I hope that as you've discussed and we've discussed, that there will be extended editions with some more stuff in it to explain it a little bit more. Still, I can't wait for it to come out. I'm buying it the day it comes out because I need to have the actual physical copy because that's just who I am. And frankly, still as excited to see it again as I was the last day I saw it in the theater.
Absolutely.
And it's still a beautiful movie.
Absolutely.
I still love
Me
it.
Too. I'm in the same boat.
But that's not the main topic for tonight. I just wanted to do kind of a refresher on that, give you the information that I have.
Okay.
The main topic, we mentioned it, I think, on the last podcast, and it has to do with a curious thing in movies. Now, of course, obviously movies are a big deal for me.
Okay.
But this combines something that's the big deal for me in movies. And again, how you and I met through movies, technically.
Yeah.
But it combines kind of your area of expertise as well. Music.
A bit. Yes. Yeah.
And what I want to talk about a little bit, and just kind of, I just want to bring attention to this in various movies for people to notice it themselves and even go and see some of these movies that we mentioned and notice these moments in the movie. I'm talking about what's called source music in a movie. I think there's another name for it. What was the other name? Do you remember?
It's something around digestive music or something of the sort.
It's not digestive because that's
dealing
with
food. It's not digestive.
He's going to look it up for a second. Basically, I'm going to describe it. It's source music. It's where while you're watching the movie, you can see something in the movie is playing the music, a car radio, a radio sitting on a shelf, maybe a band doing it, somebody singing it. Go ahead.
Digestic music.
Digestic. And this is music that the characters notice is playing, so it's not regular soundtrack stuff. It's not like when you're watching the movie and there's a really cool song on the soundtrack. This is like the characters are hearing this music, they're reacting to this music. It's a part of the scene of it.
It actually, I'm looking up the Wikipedia,
yeah.
And that's exactly what you just said is what it says. It says diegetic music.
Diegetic,
not digestic. Diegetic music or source music is music in a drama Example, film or video game that is part of the fictional setting and so presumably is heard by the characters. The term refers to diegesis, a style of storytelling.
Okay, there you go.
So it has to do with that.
The way that the story is told.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not the please continue. You're the teacher.
So
on this
there
one,
there are many examples in many movies, and we're going to give you a few of these examples. Going to point out a few of the ones that we really like, and then I want you to be able to notice these things happening in other movies. We're also going to maybe discuss a few examples of maybe ones that you think might work but aren't really this type of thing. They're just maybe good soundtrack moments where the music syncs up perfectly to what's going on, but it's not music that the characters react to. Now, can you think of something, for instance, related to what we just talked about that maybe this kind of music?
Okay, so if we're talking about it, so this is music that sits in a film.
Yeah.
Right, that is music that sits within a film that is also being witnessed by the characters at the same time, right? Yeah. Are bands part of it? Like, can a band play the music? Is that part of it?
Well, that depends on the situation. For instance, in a movie like, I'll take one of my, two of my favorite movies.
Okay.
The Spice World movie.
Okay.
Or Josie and the Pussycats.
Okay.
I've talked many times about how I love both those movies.
Yeah.
Both those movies are about bands or groups anyway.
Okay.
And they're performing their songs throughout the movies. Technically speaking, those really wouldn't count for this purpose because the point of the movie is the band playing their songs. The story is about the band playing their songs.
So the band, so then this has to be witnessed and part of the scene, but not the, case in point.
Not the main part of the story.
And that also doesn't count. So that means that also doesn't count for musicals, right? So Singing musicals in the Rain doesn't count.
Yeah, musicals really don't count.
Sound
either.
And Music doesn't count. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe the cantina band in the cantina in New Hope. Right, yes, in Star Wars, New Hope.
That would count
perfectly.
They're
playing the background, and that's part of the scene.
That's part of the scene. That would count perfectly
for it.
That's
creating a setting.
Yes.
That's where people are involved.
It's not the whole movie isn't about that group, and I think, I forget what that specific group is called. I think they're Jizz Whalers. And yes, that's actually the name of a style of music.
The Jizz Whalers?
That's actually a name of a style of music in Star Wars is
Jizz Whalers.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a good example. That's a good example of music that is part of the movie that is the people are hearing and seeing and interacting with, but it is not the general story of the movie.
Okay, so then to break it down, because I have another idea here.
Yeah.
I'm curious. So one of my favorite scenes with music in it where music helps drive the emotion of a scene. And I'm not sure that it counts because it's in the scene, but there's nothing that's stating that the actors are witnessing the scene.
Yeah, there's not a radio playing or a record playing. You don't see anything like that.
Yeah. There's a scene in Forrest Gump where Jenny is, it's in the middle of the 60s, she's strung out, she's super drugged up, she's on heroin or something.
She's on drugs.
She's messed up, she's on a lot of drugs. And she becomes suicidal and depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a scene where, and during the scene, it is fantastic because I think it's the same scene. It's New Year's Day. Remember it's New Year's Eve.
And Forrest is with Lieutenant Dan
in the bar. And Jenny is just hanging out somewhere, passed out with some dude in a hotel room and God knows where.
Yeah.
She's all dressed up. She's like, she's, you know, all hippie dressed up and stuff.
At that point, she's not hippie dressed up. She's kind of whorishly dressed up.
Is she? Okay. Yeah. Sorry. It's been a while since I've seen it. But I do remember that she is definitely rock bottom. And the guitar solo for Freebird from Lynyrd Skynyrd is playing.
Yeah,
she gets up out of the bed that she's in, and she walks over to the window of this high rise hotel room.
Yeah.
And she stands on the sill. She stands on the edge of the balcony, like hanging over the edge of the balcony, ready to jump. And it's this ridiculously tense moment.
And it's really well timed with the solo.
Absolutely.
It follows the crescendo.
Incredibly
done. Solo.
Yeah, it's just so crazy. And she decides eventually, you see her back off and she decides not to jump. But that, because technically, even though the music is driving the scene.
No, it's great.
and it's a great scene, this does not count because the music is not being heard by her while she's doing it.
No, and again, it's a great soundtrack moment. In fact, Forrest Gump has a bunch of great soundtrack moments like that.
Oh, yes.
And when they're in Vietnam, you hear All Along the Watchtower.
All Along the Watchtower, Hendrix, yeah.
Which is the Vietnam song. Between that and Fortunate Son are like the Vietnam theme songs in movies.
Oh, basically,
if one of those two songs are playing, you're in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear that song. It's like, oh, people is walking through the jungle, looking out for Charlie.
Yep.
But no, that's a great moment. But yes, it doesn't fall under this specific category of source music. Okay. By the way, I want to mention there is a second great moment with that exact song and that exact moment in that song. That's in the movie The Kingsman.
You showed me that scene.
Yes, the church fight in the Kingsman. And for me, I like that scene with that song even better than the Forrest Gump one. Whenever I hear Freebird now, I am imagining the church fight in Kingsman.
All right.
If you haven't seen Kingsman, just go look up the church fight. It's just worth it for watching the church fight. The whole movie is great, especially the end of the movie. I love the end of the movie.
Yeah.
It's an amazing end of the movie.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The hero, he's going to go save the world. He's got to go save the world, and after he saves the world, he's going to rescue this royalty person. I think she's Scandinavian in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
She says, yeah, you can go save the world, and after you do, we can do it in the butt. So he goes and saves the world, and then what's he do the second he's done saving the world? He goes back to see her.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Go for it. Go for it, Eggsy. But anyway, that's his name. You should watch it. It's a great movie.
Okay,
you should watch
both of them. I'll see it.
Both of them are fantastic films. But anyway, so yeah, those don't necessarily count. They're great soundtrack moments.
Okay.
They're amazing soundtrack moments, and the music is perfectly picked to fit into those moments. I mean, heck, as much as I've spoken of my disdain for Martin Scorsese, his usage of Gimme Shelter in like the like 7 or 8 movies he's used Gimme Shelter in, because apparently he really loves that song.
Oh,
He's a huge Rolling Stones fan. You know that, right?
I did not, but
he did 2 documentaries on the Rolling Stones. Yeah, he's a huge Stones fan.
I think he did one recently too.
Yes, it was fairly recently.
Yeah,
but Gimme Shelter he's used in a lot of movies.
Yeah,
and I mean every time he uses it, it's a perfect song because it's amazing. It has actually one of my favorite moments in a song ever. When the woman is singing at the end, and she has her voice break, you can actually hear somebody in the background, kind of whooping, in like joy for hearing her, because she was singing so hard her voice broke.
Yeah.
If you listen at that moment, there's a background person just kind of going, yeah.
Oh wow.
Seriously, listen to it again. You probably never noticed it because it wasn't pointed out to you, but you can hear somebody in the background responding to her voice breaking and just being so excited for it. It's one of those cool moments in recording where it's like that got picked up and it stayed in there, and it just gives it such a vibe to it, a life to it.
That's great.
You know, but anyway, so yeah, that kind of gives you an idea of, yeah, there can be some great soundtrack moments. Mm-hmm. And again, something like the Doors movie with Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
All the Doors songs in there, that's just the Doors. Something like Tenacious D, right?
Yeah, but there's that's a bunch more of songs like a musical,
in there,
though.
But exactly. It's more like a musical. There's a bunch of songs in there, but it's all in that goofy that's like a comedy musical, but that's within that type of realm.
Okay, so none of the songs would fit.
None of the songs in Tenacious D would really fit.
Damn it, so Master Exploder doesn't fit. That sucks.
No, it really doesn't, sadly. Okay. But there are, again, there are some great moments where the music is, and I'll give you, before we take our break, I'll give you one example, okay?
Okay.
This is my favorite example, and this is in a movie.
Okay.
That is a movie about a rock band. So the majority of the, and it's actually based on real life events. At least somewhat based on real life events. All of it's kind of fictionalized, but there's some element of real to it. And it's the movie Almost Famous by Cameron Crowe.
Okay.
He wrote the movie based on his experience in the 70s as a teenager working for Rolling Stone magazine and following a bunch of bands around.
Right.
Specifically, the Allman Brothers. A lot of it is based on. There's a lot of it that's based on the Allman Brothers. The guitarist in there is interestingly played by Billy Crudup, the same guy who was Dr. Manhattan in the Watchmen movie.
Right.
The guitarist is based on Dwayne Allman.
I was going to say that's Dwayne.
Completely and utterly.
That's got to be Dwayne.
But there's like the
Does that mean Greg is based on Jason Lee's not playing Greg?
There's other connections within there, but he said that at least that part is based on Dwayne Allman almost completely.
Cool.
But
that's awesome. I'm going to have to go see that movie again now.
All of the Stillwater songs, the fictional band in there, Stillwater,
yeah,
all of their songs really don't count. By the way, one of the women from Heart is Cameron Crowe's wife. And her and Cameron Crowe actually wrote all the music for Stillwater.
It must have been Anne.
Yeah, I think it's...
Anne Wilson?
I think it is.
It's either Anne or Nancy. Nancy's the guitar player.
It may be Nancy. I think it's Nancy, actually.
Nancy?
I think Nancy's is Cameron Crowe's wife.
Yeah. Nancy's the guitar player, Anne's the singer.
They wrote all the Stillwater music.
I'll be damned. I did not know that.
But it is Jason Lee singing, I believe, for Stillwater. But
anyway. He can sing, too, can he?
Anybody can sing. It's just whether they can sing well or not.
No, yeah.
But there's a moment in that movie... It's my favorite moment in the movie. In fact, I reference it all the time. Mm-hmm. And every time I hear this song, I say lines from the movie with my wife because it's one of her favorite films.
Mm-hmm.
In a different world, in a different life, she probably would have ended up being Penny Lane. But that doesn't surprise you, huh?
No.
She'd have followed bands around if she had the opportunity to.
Absolutely.
But it's the moment they're on the bus. Russell, the guitarist, has had his Golden God... totally drugged out moment, jumping off of houses.
Right.
And they're sitting in the bus. They're driving away from that. They're all kind of mad at each other. And it's a rock band. And a song comes on. A little piano song by Elton John. Tiny Dancer. And it's playing in the bus that they're riding in. And so slowly, the different members of the band start singing along. And the members of the band, the groupies, everybody on the bus, they all start kind of singing along bit by bit. And you can see in the process of them singing along to the song that they're like forgiving each other and healing because they're singing it together. And there comes a moment where the main character looks over at Penny Lane and says, "I need to go home." She looks at him and says, "You are home." And it's right there within the midst of the song happening. And it's just a beautiful, brilliant moment, the way that they have it shot, the way that the people are interacting with the music and how it affects all of them.
Yeah.
And these are the moments I'm talking about. Okay. We're going to take a break right now and we're going to go over a few more of these moments in movies. Hopefully some of them you'll recognize. Some of them you may not. Some of them I think are going to surprise Mike, the ones that I bring out, because I have some really iconic and classic ones. And then some that he probably wouldn't even have thought of. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back.
Hey, hey!
So, I'm going to list a few of these other... movies with this source music stuff in it.
Yeah, I'd like to get some context here. I think I have some ideas, but
I know my movie kind of library in my head is bigger than it should be.
Okay.
I was lonely for a long time, but let's see what you got and see if they were any of the ones I was thinking of, because I guarantee I have more than what you may have thought of.
Okay, okay.
Because again, this is the movies are
like
movies
I'll do one,
my,
then you do one, and then I'll do one.
Tell me, we'll just let it flow. What do you got so far? What do you think are some good ones?
Okay,
what's coming to your mind?
Okay, so one of my first ones that I could think of,
yeah,
right off the top of my head,
yeah,
was the scene with Terry Crews in White Chicks.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Singing 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton.
Yes. That's such a, first of all, it's just such an amazing moment.
Yeah.
But that is a perfect example of this music, the music playing. And then especially what's nice about that is it subverts what you're expecting for that moment to happen, because you're on the car with the white girls listening to the music, and suddenly it's Terry Crews doing his thing,
and he's the
little
one
bit
singing
of dancing,
it. And he is just into it,
oh,
man.
He is going,
he is hamming
nuts.
It, and he is so good at
that. That is his moment. To me, that was his moment of like, hey, people, look at me. I am a comedy genius.
Oh, yes.
And I still watch, he's still probably one of my favorite parts of watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I still watch it.
I've seen a couple of scenes in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and it makes me want to see it
really
bad.
Between him and, I cannot think of the name of the actor who plays Captain Holt. Their
Which
captain?
Their
captain.
Yeah.
The fact that he normally plays super serious characters,
yeah,
and he's playing a serious character, but he's a comic character being serious.
Right.
He is so amazing in the show. Just great. watching him. So good. I love that.
Huge
love
fan.
Love the show. But anyway, that is a perfect example. What else you got for me?
Oh, you want me to keep going?
Well, okay, I'll throw one out.
You shoot one
out
there. There's one that I don't. I think the one that I have right now may not be one that you might have.
This is
if you do, I will.
This is one of the earliest examples that I can remember.
I don't even know. Okay,
this is actually a movie. I will admit, I saw this movie in the movie theater. This is one of my favorite moments. This is one where the music's not playing in the background, but what happens is somebody actually starts to sing the song, and then everybody else around him sings the song as well. And it's a moment I would actually like to do and have other people do with me. I'd love to start it and see if I could get other people to go along with me and do the entire song. I don't have people around me enough that are, I think, that adventurous. I bet if I was out with a theater group, they'd probably do it.
Okay.
But the movie is My Best Friend's Wedding. And it's the moment in My Best Friend's Wedding where Rupert Everett starts singing, "I Say a Little Prayer for You."
Yes.
And that's just, you know.
And everybody breaks out into it.
And yeah, well, just it starts by a person at a time, and then suddenly, yeah, it turns into everybody singing and dancing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's such a beautiful. I love that moment in that movie. It's the only moment in that movie I really like. There's another one earlier where Cameron Diaz tries to do karaoke. She's actually not a bad singer, but her character is a terrible singer.
Yeah,
butchers the song,
but she does it on purpose. She gets into it, and everybody loves her anyway.
And it's funny.
The whole foiled again. I made her try. I tried to make her look bad and failed.
But she just looks adorable even when she's failing.
Yeah.
But that moment's fine. Whatever. The moment Rupert Everett does that song, just beautiful, brilliant, amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody's involved in it, and it's just a great cinematic moment.
I always looked at that movie and thought it was kind of half musical anyway. Kind of.
I mean, you could. No, because that's the only two moments that music happens in there. So.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, there's no other music beyond that.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, other than soundtrack music and whatnot, but no other songs or anything.
Okay.
So
my next one is something a little bit more. I'm not sure technically, but I think it technically fits within the rules.
Okay.
Okay. Man of Constant Sorrow from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It is performed twice and
musical.
Both times.
It's a musical.
Is it though?
Is it? It is.
Is it? How many songs are in that story?
Well, I mean, there's the song the sirens sing down at the river.
That's one song.
And then
song.
There's another song that's done when the people are going down to be baptized at the river. The Soggy Bottom Boys do a couple of different songs.
Yeah, but that's like...
It's more. I would say it's more of a musical than...
Does that count? Because here's the thing. Like
The thing is...
People don't... It's not everybody breaking into song, dancing in the street. This isn't Oliver.
No,
that
might sit on the fence. I would say that that's more of a, when I look at Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, I look at that as more of a musical than I do as anything else, which I think even enhances the ability of it. I mean, it's
true, but I could understand
it's the Odyssey set in the South of America, you know, the South of the United States.
Right.
To a musical. I mean, that's
right.
It's just beautiful. Who would think of taking the Odyssey, this Homeric epic,
right,
and turning it into what
and
it
that's
is?
That's the break of this, because here's the funny part about Man of Constant Sorrow.
Yeah.
That is a Bob Dylan song.
Really?
Bob Dylan wrote Man of Constant Sorrow.
Interesting.
Way the hell back. And it is a cover.
I didn't know that.
And... That's.
I'm going to say that one sits on the fence. I'm not 100% on that. I say I still view that more as a musical movie, but I can see your argument to the side of it. So
that's where I'm just
on the fence.
Yeah, that's where I got. No, I have another one, but I want you to do one.
Okay,
I have one song for two films.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with one of my favorite movies. I actually watched it just about a week ago.
Okay,
in fact, because I found it was on, and I have to watch it every time I see it's on.
Okay.
And I probably watched this movie about 100 times in a year.
Okay.
A single year. When we work at Blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay.
Which is, again, a very interesting retelling of a Shakespearean story. It's The Taming of the Shrew.
I love those. And I love seeing...
It's one of my favorite films of all times. Heath Ledger's probably... it's his first American performance, and he's still amazing in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to note that Heath Ledger apparently went to the... the Joker apparently went to the same high school as Robin. Oh, God, it just hit your head.
No, something else just hit me.
But there's the he has an iconic moment in the movie where he's singing to try to get this girl's attention a cappella at first until the band, the school band jumps in. Can't take my eyes off you. That's soundtrack.
That's not fair. Everything's happening in the streets. Sorry, I just wrote him a note. I'm going to pull this up.
We'll see. I get what you're saying there.
Sorry.
I get what you're saying. No, I get what you're saying.
I write stuff down sometimes when things hit me so that we continue moving forward. Yeah.
But anyway, no, when he's singing Can't Take My Eyes Off of You,
yeah,
that moment when he's singing that song on the bleachers and whatnot,
yeah,
great moment in the movie. Just, again, one of those times where somebody starts singing a song that's iconic, that's recognized, it's a cover song,
yeah,
and it has that moment. So what's your next one?
Okay.
Not the one you wrote down.
No.
We'll get to that one in a minute.
Yeah, because that one might be, okay, yeah.
Keep people in suspenders.
All right, so I have one song for two films.
What's the one song for the two films?
Tequila.
Okay, so
it is for two films.
I'm going to guess one, Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Yes.
Okay, where he's dancing to that. I mean, you really can't sing along much to that.
Turn on the song and then they're playing.
No, I get it.
And then also that same song is used in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Okay.
Where they're dancing to they say ninjutsu instead of tequila. Like, but they're dancing to it like when they're, that's, I think that's just before they, just before the pizza slicing scene where they're on their way back and they're partying after. Yeah.
I think you're right. Although, would we then consider the ninja rap in TMNT 2 as the same type of thing?
Yes.
I would call that, yes,
yeah, absolutely, because the whole scene changes.
They get up and dance and
everybody gets up and dances.
And then they fight Toka and Razor.
Technically, it's considered like it's, even though this is absolutely impossible in the real world, but so are giant walking, talking mutant turtles.
Yes.
Vanilla Ice ad-libbing, which is less believable than giant walking, talking mutant turtles.
Yeah, it is. But okay, so that works.
Either way, technically it works. It fits the scene.
Okay. Okay, ready for the mind to be blown.
Yeah, let's go.
How about the resurgence of a song that had, for the most part, died out in popular culture with an SNL movie?
What? Oh, my God.
Bohemian Rhapsody in Wayne's World.
Yes.
Right?
Dude, that movie.
Party on, Garth.
That scene.
Yes.
Like, that scene
that brought that
relaunched
song back.
Queen as a viable band.
Yes.
They had not done anything. I think Freddie had already died by that time.
I think so, yeah.
And so they were.
Or if not, he was in the process.
Yeah. I think it was done. And it was, he had probably had to have died five years before that.
Again, how iconic that movie moment is for that song.
Huge. I don't even know why, it was, wow.
And Mike Myers pushed hard to have that song in the movie. They wanted other songs to fill that spot, but he pushed hard.
He's like, no, Bohemian Rhapsody is the one.
Yep.
You get me that song.
And Queen let him have it for almost nothing, but it was SNL that didn't want to do it. They wanted something that was more noticeable, more viable, more approachable song. And
what? Why? What
because,
do you
again,
mean?
At that point, that song had kind of died out. And now look at it.
But wasn't it like a humongous hit at the time when it came out,
It was, but then it died out.
Maybe not as big as Crazy Little Thing Called Love. Everybody knew that.
Yeah, that was even bigger in many
ways.
But
Bohemian Rhapsody was like, that was the song you went to the concert for, right? Like, you went to see them for a collection of songs, but Bohemian Rhapsody was like,
I think most people went
shit.
To see them for We Are the Champions and We Will Rock You.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That would be the one.
We Will Rock You is the biggest sing-along song ever.
Yeah, nothing better. I mean, let's make a song that the audience has to do the beat for. Okay.
Right.
Let's do that.
Okay, so I have another one.
Okay.
And yeah, let's bring this one out. Let's bring this one out now.
Oh, dear God. First of all, I do want to say it is my favorite song by that artist. I want you to consider every other thing that artist has ever done.
Okay.
That is my favorite of his. Hands down, my favorite song of his.
I can understand that because Bat Dance is fucking
yes,
awesome.
Bat Dance.
And that's what we're talking about.
The Purple Yoda.
Wow.
That was his nickname.
I did not know that.
Yes, that was more one of his nicknames other than his actual nickname, Prince, or the artist formerly known as Prince. But
or
Prince.
Just the artist.
Or just the artist. Or Prince Rogers Nelson, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, Prince did Bat Dance for the first Batman movie.
All right. So I have two questions here.
Okay. Yes.
The first question is Bat Dance. I do not know if Bat Dance, the song, that's the song that's playing in the street while Joker's throwing money out into the street, right?
I thought it was Party Man again? Because Party Man is in the museum.
Party Man's in the museum, and they bring out a boombox, and they hit play. Party Man's playing out of the boombox when they're spray painting the paintings.
Now, see,
that's Party Man. Now, Party Man counts for sure.
100% Party Man counts.
And that's what I want to bring that one out. That's, by the way,
a great scene working with that song. That is an amazing scene.
Absolutely beautiful.
I mean, I don't like Nicholson's Joker overall. I've made that one clear before. Mm-hmm. But that scene is probably the best scene of his Joker.
Oh, yeah. That's a fantastic scene. I mean, scene. Just
great, great. Well, and then, of course, this town needs an enema. Just because I think that's funny. But anyway, I don't remember that it's Bat Dance playing at the during the parade.
I thought it was playing during the parade.
If it is, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
But definitely Party Man.
Yeah,
definitely Party Man.
But. And I'll tell you at this point, like, I know that Prince did the soundtrack, but technically, it kind of almost metas. If Bat Dance is the one that's playing in the street, and I think it is playing during the parade, technically speaking, that would almost insert Bat Dance in as source music, just because it already solidifies that Joker's a Prince fan. Duh.
Okay, that makes sense.
Especially with the museum scene, if not him wearing all of the purple.
Yes, all of the purple. That's a good point. So Jack Nicholson's Joker is a Prince fan.
That makes perfect sense.
So if he was making like a dating app profile, he would put on there Prince fan.
Oh, he totally would put Prince fan on there.
Avant-garde artist. And a degree in chemical engineering.
Technically, yes.
Yes. So, you know, employee of the Smilex Corporation. But anyway, we could go on. It would be this could devolve into something very humorous.
I was going to say Ace Chemicals insurance claim.
Yes. But anyway, Party Man for sure. Bat Dance. Hey, if that's what's playing during the parade, then yes, I'll give that one to you.
Okay.
Let's see. I think I have a blow your mind one.
Okay.
This director's pretty good about putting these kind of things in.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to name three movies that the director did this. First one is going to be Jackie Brown. This director being Quentin Tarantino.
Of course.
Hold on.
Okay, I'll continue.
So Jackie Brown. Uh-huh. There's one of the big plot points that revolves around the bail bondsman trying to learn about the band the Delphonics. Now, uh-huh. I don't remember the exact song that's played, but there's Delphonic songs being played. So that's kind of, again, Quentin likes to use source music a lot in his movies. Now, there's a very famous moment in Don't Even Go There. I think you hit the one I'm...
No, I'm not going with a Quentin Tarantino movie. Okay. You have allowed me to ADD segue into another film, and I will mention it right after you're done. Please continue. Okay.
So, next one is going to be Pulp Fiction. Now, most people are thinking I'm gonna reference the dancing scene, but I'm not.
Okay.
I'm referencing, actually, when Bruce Willis is in the car... And that song, the song comes on where it has the reference to watching Captain Kangaroo.
Oh,
I forget what the song's name is. But what's funny about that is that's actually put in there to be a reference to Die Hard.
Oh, and that's a comment cute. In Die Hard.
But the real one I'm going for, the real Quentin Tarantino one, the one where he picked a song and changed what I find most interesting is when these songs change the meaning and feeling of by where they are in a movie and how they exist in a movie, they change how you feel about the song. The scene is from the movie Reservoir Dogs, Stuck in the Middle with You.
Oh man.
You know which scene I'm talking about?
It's been a very long time since I've seen Reservoir Dogs. I want you to refresh my memory real quick. Imagine
the song Stuck in the Middle with You coming on the radio, because the radio's playing throughout the whole movie, and you hear even the radio doing its bumper stuff and all that. That song comes on. Michael Madsen is dancing around with a scalpel in his hand.
Oh.
And a dude strapped to a chair.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's the ear-cutting scene.
Oh, man.
Now it's coming back into your brain.
Oh, yeah. That's
that just totally changes the feel of the song.
Brilliantly gruesome.
Yes. Especially because the fact that in the original, he shot it two ways. He shot it where you actually see Michael Madsen cut the guy's ear off. And then he shot another one where he has the camera pan away while the ear's being cut off. And the shot he kept in the movie is the camera panning away, because it actually gives you a feeling of more dread and more concern because you don't see what's happening.
Yeah, your imagination in your head. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Dude, okay, that's decent.
Yeah, that's a good moment.
That's great. Okay, so in the middle of you doing stuff, in the middle of you... doing stuff.
Yes.
Explaining everything.
Explaining this,
good
yes.
Lord, Mike.
Dealing with, talking about the Tarantino movies. Yeah.
I had a couple of other ones.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Bring them.
Little Nicky.
Ooh. Are you talking
about the record playing scene?
The Chicago scene. Okay.
The record playing scene. First off, because they're talking about, they're trying to run the Ozzy record backwards. Yeah. Like, no. The Oz man was always straightforward with his messages. Yeah. But check this out. Chicago. And then he popped the song on. They start playing it.
Yeah.
I believe in you, and I know you believe in me. Oh, yeah. And then they run it backwards. Yeah. You're like, that. Now, technically.
Yes, I'll give you that.
Would
no, that's
work
good.
As source music.
That's good.
Running the record backwards.
That's good.
But that one, and any instance where the song by the Lone Rangers is being played during Airheads. Airheads is full of source music. It takes place at a radio station. And there's no technical musical aspect because the band is just trying to be a band. But I think my favorite part of it was where his girlfriend is in the car.
Yeah.
And she turns on the car and the tape player is playing and she's like, fuck that. And she ejects the tape and throws it out into the street.
Yeah.
And then eventually, in another scene later, she has to pick it up and like the clean tape's all ripped out of it and a dog pissed on it and it's in the gutter and all that. That one took some buildup to it.
I would say
the song itself exists because the characters are reacting to it.
Okay. Even though that's still the idea is still it's a song from the. If I'll allow that, if
okay,
you can allow in That Thing You Do.
Okay,
the first time they hear their song on the radio.
You know what? I would do that. Okay. I would allow that because it's a reaction to
in that moment, do you remember that moment in the movie or have you not seen the movie?
I've never seen it.
The moment
but the context makes sense to me.
The moment is actually quite amazing.
Yeah.
Because it's announced, somebody's holding a radio, right? Handheld hip radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's announced that this is the new song from the Wonders, because that's their name.
Right.
And, you know, that it's That Thing You Do. And it starts playing. He freaks out. He's running through town
trying
to find all the other band members where they're at to turn the music on. And they're dancing to it. They're singing along to it. But he's trying to find everybody to tell them, turn the damn radio on. We're on the radio. And it's like, this is the first time that they're being played on the radio.
Yeah.
And so while it is about the band and their music,
right.
The music is technically coming from a different source than them sitting there and playing it.
Yes.
So
now that opened, just to let you know, that opens up the floodgates a bit, but it technically counts as source music. I would let that happen. I would say that would count. Now, technically, that also opens up, especially the scene in Oh Brother, where they're cutting Man of Constant Sorrow in the studio with the clone of Robert Johnson. That's one.
You're seriously just going to harp on that
I'm
one
not going to harp on it. I'm not going to harp
that's
on
a
it.
That's a matter of picking and a singing.
Dude. Hey, man, that guy was supposed to be Robert Johnson. That's who they're cutting the studio with.
Yes,
And I love that.
Hold on.
I have, like, all of his recordings.
Hold on. I just want to say, I know my Robert Johnson references, sir.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm just making sure, man.
He's the American version.
You best know your son house, too.
No, he's the American version of the whole Crossroads Devil, Crossroads Demon contract.
No, yeah, that's the legend, man.
The Crossroads Demon contract is a long, long-lasting fairy tale. It just, with each culture that comes across, they have their own adapted version of it. So.
Absolutely. There was another one, too. It was on tip of my tongue, and we skipped past it. Ah, damn it.
You didn't write it down?
I kept writing a bunch of other ones.
Go ahead. What other ones do you have?
Those were the ones that I went over. Okay. Were the ones that I wrote down while we were doing. I wrote all this stuff down while we were doing it because I kind of had a vague idea and I slowly learned as the process went along. Oh my goodness, I can't think of the last one. So, I mean, technically, if you open it up with certain scenes like Man of Constant Sorrow, is I will I will admit stretching it a bit.
Okay. And I agree. It's a little bit of a stretch. So is that thing you do. That's a little bit of a stretch.
You know what, man, that one hits it with me because I've literally had that happen, and it's still one of the greatest feelings. Like
to have your song playing,
hear your song played on the radio. Yeah. It's dope, man. I love it.
It's I'm sure that. I mean, I've heard your songs.
That's what I was.
Spinal
Tap. There was a portion in Spinal Tap, but Spinal Tap technically is a mockumentary, and there are many
about a band.
Musical performances. But there is a scene in Spinal Tap, where they are sitting. They're on tour, and they're trying. They're just. The tour is bunk. It's not succeeding. And they end up getting played on a classic rock station.
Yeah.
And after the song is over, they're sitting there listening, and they're listening to, like, it was like a doo-wop tune that they did back in the 60s.
Okay.
Called Flower People.
Yeah, back when they were a different type of band.
Back when they were, because that's one of the stories of Spinal Tap. If you haven't seen it, they go through every single possible fad of rock stardom
that
they could.
Just listen, everybody, just go and see it.
Yeah, it's worth
just
watching.
Rent it. Find it where it's streaming, whatever.
The comedy, full warning, the comedy is a bit slow. It's a little dry.
Yes.
But if you happen to be involved in music at all, you will get all of the jokes.
So funny.
Especially if you've stressed over being any type of musician or working in media.
Moreover,
it is brilliant.
Moreover, you may actually understand jokes that other people have told you. And never gotten
definitely.
Because
you're not you'll get all of the references after this point. People still make them. But what I'm talking about specifically is there's a scene where they're listening to this song on the radio,
and they comment afterwards about it. They
and
talk
the
about
radio
it.
DJ comments afterwards. So they're sitting there listening. I'm like, man, this is nice to hear our song on the radio again. This is great. And they're all just like, yeah, this is awesome. And then at the very end, they're like, that was Spinal Tap with Flower People, man. Wonder what they're doing right now. We haven't heard a damn thing from them in years. Like, and the DJ just goes off, and it just brings down the mood of the whole scene.
That
everybody's pissed.
That definitely counts.
Okay,
because again, it is source music. It's not them playing. It's source music, and it does make a difference in kind of the, you know, it makes a scene out of it. The characters are reacting to it. They're aware of it happening.
Okay.
And so that I would say that
definitely
counts.
I kind of wanted to make sure
of
that. I didn't know.
That definitely counts within that scope of things. So it's an interesting way of telling the story, isn't it?
It really is.
Music and I mean, there are times that we can talk about music being used as soundtrack music. Like we said, the two moments with Freebird, every moment ever used with All Along the Watchtower, the Jimi Hendrix version, by the way. We don't need the Dylan version. Yes, I know. Isn't he the writer of it? Yes, Dylan wrote that song.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Yeah,
he
we don't need his version. We don't need his version. We need Jimmy's version. That is the definitive version, period, exclamation point. And there, I mean, I'm sure that we can think of many, many other moments of great songs that are soundtrack songs that are, and I'm talking pop culture songs, not just like orchestral soundtrack songs, but there are many moments of those that are great moments, but while they fit the story and they work with the story, having the characters actually interact with the music, I don't know, to me, it makes me feel like I'm connected to them. I could be listening to the song at the exact same time with them. Actually, throwback to the original.
another one that I could.
What? Go ahead. No, go ahead. Do your one that you're thinking of, because I want to throw back actually to Almost Famous in a second.
Okay, so two of them.
Yeah.
One of them is one of. Okay, so two of them from the same movie.
Yeah.
Big Lebowski. The first scene where he gets kicked out of a taxi cab. I can't stand the fucking Eagles, man. Like that scene because they're playing Take It Easy.
Yeah.
And he gets kicked out of the cab because he can't stand the Eagles after he's had a shit day. And then the second scene is where he gets knocked out, and the dream is just checked in from Kenny Rogers, I think.
I don't even remember the song.
Just
all I
checked in
is
to
the,
see what condition my condition was in is the full title of the song.
All I remember is the sequence for that, which is just
fantastic. And he's jamming out and the bowling thing and all the effects. And dude, this came out in like 98.
Yeah,
nobody was doing that.
Interestingly enough, you've mentioned two Coen Brothers movies. So,
I did.
Yeah. Coen Brothers fan, are you?
I love Coen Brothers.
Okay, good. You should be.
Yeah.
You should be.
One of my favorite ones I saw was oh my goodness. Never mind. We'll talk to you about it. I'll talk to you about the Coen. Dude, we should do a Coen Brothers one.
We can. I mean,
we should totally do that. Like their ability to tell stories without conclusions is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of it will center on my two favorite movies of theirs, but Lebowski and Fargo. for sure.
Oh yeah.
Fargo's amazing.
Oh yes.
Just because the cast, oh my God, the cast of Fargo.
Every Coen Brothers movie. See, here's the deal. Here's the cool deal about a Coen Brothers movie.
They get the best people.
Not just that.
Actually, no.
But the fact that there's so it's so rich that every Coen Brothers movie you have to watch more than once, and then you have to discuss it with your friends, yeah. And then you watch. It's like a good
and
album.
I'm wrong. I'm wrong. By the way,
they play out like good albums.
There aren't two that are my favorite. There are three We just talked about Soggy Bottom Boys. Can't think of the movie name.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes, I love that movie.
Oh yeah, very
so
much so.
Very much.
There was another one that I can't. I think it's like A Regular Man or An Ordinary Man or something like that.
Ordinary Man, I think.
An Ordinary Man or something like that.
Isn't that a Billy Bob Thornton movie?
No.
Who's in that one?
Or
is that a Paxton?
No.
I'm gonna have to look it up.
No, a Paxton's not in it. It's funny because there's a guy that I know through a friend of mine who does voice acting, and he plays the antagonist of the film.
Really?
In that film.
Wow.
I'll have to find it for
you. Yeah, we'll have to find this.
I'll have to find the name of the film for you, and he is hilarious in this film. But it's just that wonder. All I remember in it is just following the life of this guy who's like almost an Orthodox Jew, but it's following the life of this. The main protagonist is very staunchly Jewish. And he follows the law and he follows his faith, and the world just starts to come down and come apart around him, and all of these things that are well out of his control are just so overwhelming that he starts to find no faith in his life and his habits. And as things move forward, he's constantly challenged. His outlook on life is consistently challenged. And multiple things happen, like his wife cheats on him, and all of these terrible things happen. And if I remember correctly, it ends with a tornado at the end of the film, just completely like out of nowhere, and then boom, black title card, end of the film, end credits start. Like, and the point of the film is that no matter how many times you think that you may have things together, there will always be something out of your control, and the best thing that you can do is just keep pushing forward.
And this is a Coen Brothers film?
Yes.
I'm doing some research right here.
And it is a brilliant film. And I watched it years ago when I was living with a couple of roommates. One of my friends of mine who used to, funny enough, be a Blockbuster employee.
Miller's Crossing?
No.
Let me see here.
I know that it got
The Man Who Wasn't There?
Was that it? No, I don't think it's The Man Who Wasn't There. We're going to have to find it, the title of it.
Okay.
But I remember that it was nominated for an Oscar, if I remember correctly, at some point. But I hated it the first time I saw it, like, vehemently, because I was just like, where's the end? What's the conclusion? Until I watched it again, and it was...
A Serious Man.
A Serious Man. That's what it is. A Serious Man. That is... Dude, I'm telling you... Next week when we get together, whenever we do the Coen Brothers
friend?
His name's Brad, actually, old roommate of mine. Brad. You remember Brad?
Brad.
Yeah.
Hmm.
This is a very strange and awkward way to end this episode.
I don't remember Brad. Maybe I remember Brad. Oh, he was in it. Interesting.
Yeah, no, Brad was not in it.
No, Simon Helberg.
Oh.
We'll have to. That's one I'm not as familiar with. But I was just looking over, and there's a bunch of Coen Brothers movies that I didn't even think about. Like The Hudsucker Proxy. I love that movie.
That was a Coen Brothers movie?
Yes, apparently it was.
I did not know that.
Let's see. So was I'm trying to find the other ones that were. Coen Brothers episode is going to have to happen.
Yeah, this is going to have to be a deal. And I'm going to have to do some research too, because I've been in any Coen Brothers movie I've ever seen, like, I've loved so much, except for the first time I saw it. First time you see it, you're like, what the hell is that? And then you see it again, you start to get it.
Well, I like
it's the, like Wes Anderson films. It's kind of the same deal.
Wes Anderson. Oh, wait. I like a couple of his movies, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't he the one that did The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou?
Yes.
I love that movie. That movie is so, like, out there.
All of them are.
I know. His movies are really, really weird like that. The hotel one that he did, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
That's a freaky movie. I love the way he films his movies, too.
His framing and his color choice and his lighting are insane.
He uses some amazing miniatures.
But yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, we're diverging. We'll stop this episode now because we're going to go off into tangents about other movies. Although that should really show you how movies are such a there's such a way that we can communicate with each other, and the music that's used in them, again, be it for source music, be it soundtrack music, be it whatever, this just adds that other level of communication, that other level of connection. And I've said it before, I will say it again till my dying day. This is the art form that future generations will judge this century and the previous century on.
Absolutely.
Is filmmaking. More so than any other type of art that has come out at the time, this is the era of filmmaking, and our films will be
this is our Renaissance sculptures.
Yes,
this
very
is our,
much so.
Yeah, this
very
is
much so.
That's exactly what this is. This is our great oil paintings that are still sustained thousands of years from now.
And so I can't see why we don't talk about this even more than what we do, because
Definitely.
They really are important things. So thank you all for listening. By the way, Mike.
Yes.
Where are people listening to us, and where else can they listen to us?
Well, hopefully you're listening to us either at thezenialchronicles.com or zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You could also check us out on Facebook. You can check us out on TuneIn. We are on, oh my gosh, Google and Apple and all of the places.
Spotify.
We're on Spotify, too.
Yes.
You can listen to us for free at any of those places.
Yes,
plus,
free.
We also have a full archive of all of our podcasts on our YouTube channel.
Yes. Gotta watch it on the YouTube. If you watch, you'll just see like a really cool like background thing and a wavy little liney thing. But you get to listen to us on there. And like he said, full archive, everything. There's even a few videos that actually have our faces in them.
Yeah, every once in a while when we have the capability of recording our ugly mugs, we have we go ahead and make that happen. So.
Some of us even try to do some acting in them. It's very good. Very good.
Well, I will take that as a compliment, sir.
Some of us also spill our drinks in them. That happens more regularly than you
think. That may or may not
think.
Be the same person that he's talking about.
Yeah, that happens. And that happens far more regularly than you think it might.
# technical difficulties.
Hell yes.
By the way, on our YouTube, subscribe and click the bell.
Yes, click the bell. Because if you
click
the bell, you get notifications. So whenever
we
put stuff out.
Comment because we respond.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
We do respond. In fact, when we do, we make sure to let you know which one of us is responding. So that if you want to talk to a specific one of us, you can.
Yeah, you can.
So anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.